Mary Mother Jones was a legendary labor organizer in the late 19th and early 20th centuries who fought for better working conditions and fair pay for miners, mill workers, and child laborers. A West Virginia judge once called her the most dangerous woman in America for her ability to get workers to walk out on strike. A one-woman musical, Mother Jones in Heaven, celebrates the life of Jones, and it's coming to Albuquerque and Santa Fe. Vivian Nesbitt performs the show, accompanied by her husband, John Dillon. They are also known for their work on the public radio program Art of the Song, which was conceived and launched in New Mexico. Vivian and John still have ties here, but they've been traveling for 2 years, and I caught up with her from their RV in Oklahoma, en route to Albuquerque.
I was a history major in college, and one of my fascinations was the intersection between the Industrial Revolution and humanity, and where those two things meet. And of course, Mother Jones was at the very front of that, fighting for the rights of workers in the face of this growing and inhumane type of industry that was happening. And it was at a time when there were no mechanisms for dealing with that, you know. She was a legendary figure, and I was fascinated by her, though I knew very little about her. I just knew that she was sort of a pretty priceless piece of work. I have other words for them that we can't use on radio. So time goes on, and I was at a folk music conference in Toronto, funnily enough, which is where Mary Harris Jones, Mother Jones, moved to from Ireland when she was 14. I met up with a man named Cy Conn, who was a friend through Art of the Song and a labor organizer, founder of Grassroots Leadership. And he and I were talking, and he asked me what I'd been up to. And I said, well, I'd been in New York with a play that I'd written. And his eyes lit up, and he said, I write musical theater. He gave me the script, and I've been working on it ever since. It's been 5 years that we've been in development with it and putting it away, picking it up, putting it away, picking it up. Finally just really got serious on a certain November of 2016. And John and I looked at each other and he said, we have to get this out on the road because we're about to lose our country. So I guess I could say I was complacent in my politics and in my activism. Until that day, on election day in 2016, and I suddenly realized that I really needed to put my money where my mouth was, and I needed to put my art where my mouth was.
Why does Mother Jones speak to us today?
She stood up for people that were underserved or people that were not served. She also spoke truth to power in a way that is really compelling. She saw the inequity between the classes, and she spoke truth to it. She saw inequity between the financial structures. She also saw that poverty led to disease and led to a poverty in the form of lack of services would cause entire areas to be wiped out. You know, whereas if you were rich enough, you could keep yourself away from the yellow fever epidemics, fires, everything else that kind of affected poor and working class families. And she spoke truth to that and raised awareness about it in a time when women weren't speaking up, couldn't speak up, had no mechanism to speak up. So it was really fascinating to see how she did it.
And this is called Mother Jones in Heaven, which is interesting. So we're joining her just after she's died, and she's in heaven, which happens to look like an Irish pub. Sounds like a good deal to me. So is it looking back on her life?
Yes. She goes back over her life, and she balances the scales of her methods and her practices, and some of which were pretty sketchy, you know. I mean, she was very controversial, and she was known for her being a mistress of political theater. You know, she could make a mountain out of a small event and get national attention. She was feared and revered. And I think, you know, for me, it's just this power of one when in service to the many. You know, that really makes her so fascinating to me.
How old was she when she died?
Well, technically.
Oh, was she like most Irish women and she lied about her age?
She lied up.
Oh, she lied up.
Interesting. Yep, she lied up.
Say more.
She made herself older. She claimed her birthday was May 1st, and she claimed that she was 100 years old on 1930. And so they threw her this big 100-year birthday. She was actually 93. But, you know, who's counting at that point? You know, she's and for everything that she did, traveling by foot, by train, by horse, by buggy, she traveled all over the country. The list of places that she was, that she'd been, you know, she could claim to be 200, and I'd give it to her.
So she came from Ireland when she was 14, landed in Toronto.
Her father had come over, emigrated. Of course, she was born in, I believe, 1837. And so that was right before the Irish famine, the Great Hunger of 1848. She was living in Cork. And families were, you went unaffected by that. The coffin ships that were leaving for this country and for Australia would sail out of Cork. And so what she must have seen in those days, although in Elliot Gorn's really seminal work on called Mother Jones, the Most Dangerous Woman in America, he has this wonderful line where he said anyone asking about her childhood was met with a stony silence. Mm. She just wouldn't talk about it. Her father emigrated to Toronto and did quite well. I've forgotten what his trade was, but he did very well. And the family ultimately joined him when Mary was about 14. And then she went on to become a teacher and moved to the United States.
And how did she get caught up in the labor movements?
I believe that she was radicalized in, during the time in Haymarket, just after strikes and the Haymarket catastrophe that happened in Chicago, where police and strikers were killed.
That was in, remind me when that was, the 1890s?
1890s, yeah, I believe it was. Okay. And she had been living, she was in Chicago for the fire. She was like the Forrest Gump of some disasters, and that's one of the things that just is so...
Did her cow knock over the lantern? No, I'm just kidding.
But, you know, well, when you come and see the show, we'll give it a look.
Okay.
But you'll see what she survived, and it really makes sense. Mm-hmm. When you see what she survived, for my money, you know, she could have just as easily ended up barking mad on a street corner and died at a young age, but she didn't. All this grief and rage and put it to work. She was married to a foundry worker in Memphis, and after she moved back to Chicago, I think that was where she really tapped into working through the Knights of Labor and became aware of the union, the importance of unions.
And how did she adopt the moniker Mother? Was she a mother?
Well, she was. Mm-hmm. And again, you have to come and see the show.
Oh, okay.
but she adopted. Now, honestly, at that time period, a lot of women were called Mother. Mm. There was another Mother Jones. There were, you know, it was not unusual for an elder female to be given the moniker Mother. But she took it as an identity in a way that was sort of beyond the pale. There are lots of different stories. One is that she was nursing a dying miner after a mining accident, and he looked up and saw her and mistook her for his own mother and called her Mother, and it stuck. Other people document that she adopted this herself, because this whole identity of her in the black dress, she made that happen herself. It was she created this identity.
Hmm.
You know, and marched out into the world and started rabble-rousing.
This is Women's Focus. I'm Megan Kamrick. I'm speaking with Vivian Nesbitt, who brings her one-woman show, Mother Jones in Heaven, to Albuquerque and Santa Fe this coming week. Find out more at KUNM.org.
Tell me about the music that your husband, John, is accompanying you. And, of course, we know you from Art of the Song here on KUNM. So are you two singing together? Are you
a little bit? Yeah. Mm-hmm. John does harmonies on several of the songs, and he plays a guitar, and he also has one of his handmade guitars, a Dylan guitar, and the songs are just beautiful. And that was really one of the reasons that I got hooked into it. You asked why I got hooked on this on this piece that the music is really amazing. This Cy Conn is a masterful songwriter. He's a great poet. And the prosody, to use a fancy songwriting term.
Yes.
The way he sets lyrics onto a melody is really amazing. John plays guitar, and like I said, and he also does some percussion to add, and plays harmonica to add tonal and atmospheric qualities throughout the piece.
What has been the response so far? I mean, we're not in a time when union membership is very much a reality for a lot of Americans. How have people responded to the show?
I think we're seeing signs of it coming back. We just spent some time in Lansing, Michigan, where we actually thought, well, what would the legend herself do if she were to arrive in a town and there were 8 picket lines in front of the GM plant? It's like she would visit all of them. Mm-hmm. And she would talk to everybody and she'd, you know, shake hands. And so that's what we did.
Did you go in costume?
I did. Yeah. There's some fun pictures on Facebook. It was fascinating to talk to the striking GM workers. And we were taken around by a young man named Jason Peake, who is the education coordinator for the UAW Local 602. And he's in his mid to late 30s, wasn't born into a union family, quite the opposite. And the fire in his belly and his knowledge and his commitment to supporting his fellow members and also any worker who wants to hear about it is really wonderful. And the clarity of his vision for the future of what the UAW can achieve is really pretty amazing. We enjoyed our time with him indeed, and I really enjoyed talking to the women who were in line about their situation, you know, shop captains and strike captains that were out saying, you know, I'm here, I've got 2 children at home that I still need to feed. And so it was wonderful to get their stories. To answer the rest of the question, you know, why is it important that we get this message out? The history of the labor unions has largely been forgotten, I have to say, and has also gotten a bad rap. We have a mentor back in Troy, New York, named Paul Cole, and he is a longtime labor organizer and member of the AFL-CIO and treasurer secretary. I could go on and on with his list. He's very interested in bringing labor education into the schools, high school and middle school particularly, and has developed curriculums for those to that end. So we take those curriculums with us wherever we go so that we can offer them to people if they're interested.
Hmm. Have you encountered audience members who sort of, this is a new world for them? They don't really know this history. You're helping. Really?
Mm-hmm. And they're the fun thing about it, you know, there's some people who are getting introduced to the material and certainly introduced to Mother Jones. You know, we're waiting for the day that someone asks in a Q&A, like, when did she go into publishing? You know, I love her magazine. But people will say, well, I knew a little bit about her, or I didn't know anything about her, but I'm blown away. We've had some people say this has inspired them to go and stop just writing emails to their senators and congressmen and congresspeople, that they're now actually banging on doors and doing door-to-door work, or they're picking up the telephone, they're getting more engaged. We've talked to a lot of retired union members who have said that they wished that they had this play, Mother Jones in Heaven, by Cy Conn, to go to in the 80s when they were organizing, because it's uplifting. It actually gives you a sense that there's hope and that your voice is not falling on deaf ears.
How long have you guys been performing it? How long have you been on the road? Where have you been?
We're coming back to New Mexico with this new iteration of it. We had a 60-minute version of it. Then we added a little more and made it 70. And now we've reorganized the whole piece. And it's now 90 minutes. And it has more material. We sat with Cy Conn and went through rehearsal process with him and reorganized it. So it's quite different. And we've done a total of all of those iterations. We've done a total of about 40 performances, and we've got 8 on this tour, and then it looks like it's really loading up. It looks like we're going to be doing a tour of West Virginia tour of Illinois, also throughout the Capital District in upstate New York. New York State has dedicated the month of May as Labor History Month, so that's prime for us, you know, to go out and tour about.
Wow, that's exciting. And so I will put this on the KUNM website with this interview, but you will be in Albuquerque, October 24th at 7 p.m., the Rio Grande Center for Spiritual Living, and then three performances in Santa Fe, Friday, October 25th at 7, and then Saturday, October 26th, 2 and 7. Those are going to be at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Santa Fe. I will put more info at KUNM.org. And Viv, you and John were here in Albuquerque creating Art of the Song. And you also had the Soul Acting Academy. At some point, you guys, tell me if I'm wrong, you sold everything, bought an RV, and hit the road. When did you do? I didn't even know you'd done that. So when did you do that? How's it been?
Yeah, it was a bit of a radical move. You know, quite honestly, it was fostered because I had a series of losses in my family. And John and I looked at each other and we were like, what are we doing? And we also had a series of people who were ill, and we were feeling this increased pressure. We have children on the West Coast and aging parent on the East Coast, and it just became kind of a lot. Mm-hmm. It broke my heart to sell Soul Acting Academy, and yet in order for it's now called Soul Acting Studios, under the ownership and management of Chris Marini and Ron Weisberg, and they're doing a great job. And I knew that in my heart, I wasn't really a business manager, so it was the best thing, really, quite honestly, for the school, was to get new management, as much as, you know, I loved being there, and I loved everybody that was a part of it. For the school to survive and for me to actually do what I needed to do for myself, I needed to sell it. And then we sold our house to a wonderful woman whose parents lived in the neighborhood. And we bought this gorgeous RV, which is like 32 feet long and bigger than my studio apartment in New York City when I was there. And we have traveled. We've crisscrossed the country several times. We've been on the road for just over 2 years. And we're making our home base right now up in Saratoga Springs, New York, to be closer to my mom, and also take advantage of some theater and music opportunities that have been happening around there. But we still have a strong base in New Mexico and consider it a creative home and a spiritual home, and just isn't our brick and mortar home at the moment.
That was Vivian Nesbitt, who brings her one-woman show, Mother Jones in Heaven, to Albuquerque on Thursday, October 24th, and to Santa Fe on Friday and Saturday, October 25th and 26th. Find out more at KUNM.org. And we'll go out with a song from the show, The Whiskey Ring and the Railroad.
If living was a thing that money could buy, the rich would live and the poor would die. Ashes to ashes and dust to dust, with a whiskey ring and the railroad trust. Let the rich man live and the poor man bust, with a whiskey ring and the railroad trust. Are you loyal to the Constitution? Are you looking for a contribution? Here's a little present from the boys in the back, from the river of whiskey and the solid gold track. Ashes to ashes and dust to dust, with a whiskey ring and the railroad trust. Let the rich man live, then the poor man bust, with a whiskey ring and the railroad trust. Are you praying for the resurrection? Are you running in the next election? Here's a little something you can use as you choose, from the solid gold engine and the river of booze. Your shoulder means a man you can trust. A hand in your pocket means the railroad trust. Ashes to ashes and dust to dust, with a whiskey ring and the railroad trust. Let the rich man live and the poor man bust, with a whiskey ring and the railroad trust. Are you of a pure and lofty nature? Do you make a bundle from the legislature? Here's something trail from the bottles of bourbon on the silvery rail. Dust when the whiskey ring and the railroad trust. Let the rich man